Now, Skin Deep with Dr. Ronnie Monk, dermatologist. All your skincare questions answered on CJAD 800.
706 CJAD time, and welcome to Skin Deep, as the man says, with dermatologist Dr. Ronnie Monk. I'm Dan Laxer, and I know how important your skin is to you because I've experienced firsthand just how hard it is to get an appointment to see a dermatologist. Well, tonight, you get to talk to one right here on CJD. Let's talk about your skin and how to keep it at its healthiest. Dr. Ronnie Monk is a medical and aesthetic dermatologist here to take your calls, answer your questions and concerns at 514-790-0800, star talk, star 8255. That's a free call on Bell Mobility, as you know. 1-800-491-CJD. Wait, I'm not done. And you can text your questions in, as always, to 514-800. Dr. Monk, welcome to CJAD.
Thank you, Dan. Happy to be here.
Yeah, good to have you along. Good to welcome to the family. I'm fascinated by what attracts doctors to their specialties. What was it about dermatology that attracted you?
You know what? When I was going through med school, never knew I wanted to be a dermatologist. Mm-hmm. I always thought I wanted to do surgery. I thought maybe ear, nose, and throat surgery, plastic mm-hmm. surgery. And then, you know what? I did a month in dermatology, fell in love with it.
Yeah.
It encompasses a vast array of medical specialties, lots of internal medicine in it. Pathology is important in it. Surgery, obviously, it's procedural. Mm-hmm. It's very intellectual. So right away, fell in love, and that was it.
Excellent. Now, people talk about, they talk about it because it's a fact that skin is the largest organ in the human body, right? How important is it to take really good care of your skin?
I think it's extremely important. I mean, you only have one skin. You're born with it. It's yours forever. It is the largest organ of the body. And if you don't take good care of it, I mean, you're going to pay for it later because... sun damage is cumulative over time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I see tons of patients in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and they say, you know, I'm so careful with the sun now. Why am I getting all these new lesions on my face, precancerous things? And I tell them, you know, it's because of the changes and the sun tanning and bathing that you took in your teens, in your 20s.
Yeah.
So it's really cumulative sun exposure that's important. And, now we know how dangerous and carcinogenic the sun is. So
absolutely,
if you start with your skin care, your sun care early, you can really prevent those changes from happening.
I remember growing up, I mean, not me because I'm pale. So if I go outside in the summertime, I burst into flames. But there were people in the throughout the 70s who were just like baby oil and reflectors, and a healthy look was a sort of a deep, dark, suntanned look. But now pallor is the picture of health, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at all the celebrities there. I mean, it's like a 180. You know, 15 years ago, they were all tanned, and now they're all pale. I mean, pallor is definitely, everybody kind of, I think, to me, that's, pallor is beauty.
Yeah.
You know, sun, if you're in the sun, those sunbathers, you know, the sun on top of being carcinogenic and mm-hmm. causing skin cancers, it leads to brown spots and sunspots and wrinkles. The other effect that sun has is it's actually immunosuppressive. So, you know, when you do studies and you actually do skin biopsies of people being exposed to long-term sun exposure, their immune cells are down and they're more at risk of other that's partly why the sun causes cancer is because it's immunosuppressive.
Okay.
So, there's lots of negative effects on the sun. And then I always get the question from people, you know, the sun, we need sun for vitamin D.
I was just going to ask that. How do you know when you've got enough and when it's too much?
Yeah. I mean, it's always been a controversial issue. And the endocrinologists say, you know, they used to say, go in the sun and get 3 minutes of sun exposure a day, gets your vitamin D. But I mean, to me, the risks of sun exposure and the skin cancer it can cause really outweigh the benefits of the vitamin D. And whether you get it mm-hmm. in your diet or through supplementation, it's been shown in studies to be the exact same thing of being in the sun in mm-hmm. terms of the vitamin D you're getting. So that's why I counsel all my patients, use your sun protection, avoid the sun, but be sure to supplement to avoid vitamin D deficiency.
And I want to come back to this topic in a sec. Dr. Ronnie Monk is, let's call him our resident dermatologist here for you tonight at 514-790-0800. Star talk on Bell Mobility. And I see a couple of texts have already come in, which we'll get to in a few moments at 514-800. when I was growing up, there were a bunch of different kinds of sunscreen. I don't think we even called them sunscreen at the time, but then PABA was the popular one. And then they said, oh, PABA's no good. Don't use that. Now, I don't know what the active ingredient is, but everybody's talking about the UVA rays and the UVB rays. What do we really have to be careful of?
Yeah. Okay. So here's the lowdown on sunscreens.
Yeah.
So there's two kinds of rays. There's UVA, UVB. Mm-hmm. UVB will cause sunburns. Okay. And UVB is...
will cause sunburns.
UVB is what causes sunburns and redness.
All right.
UVB is filtered through clouds. Okay. So on a cloudy day or in the winter, you're not going to get UVB on your skin. You're not going to get a sunburn, which everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
However, UVA is constant year round. It's there in the winter, summer, doesn't matter. It's always there.
Mm-hmm.
And UVA will go through clouds. It will go through windows. You're constantly getting UVA on your skin.
Okay.
Both of them are carcinogenic and contribute to skin cancer. UVA causes aging of the skin, wrinkling, sunspots, brown spots. So I tell everybody, and everybody says, you know, I don't need to wear sunscreen in the winter. I'm not in the sun. I'm not getting sun. The sun is constant. It's always there.
Yeah.
And if you're prone, especially if you're fair and you have a lot of sun damage already, I mean, you got to wear your sunscreen on an annual basis every day because you're always getting UVA on your skin.
I will never forget going skiing. It was a beautiful day. I came home with a sunburn.
Yeah. I mean, you got a sunburn because obviously it was sunny. You got some UVB on your skin. But even if it was cloudy and you didn't get a sunburn, Dan, you're still getting a lot of UVA on your skin and it's still having negative effects on your skin.
Even if I don't know it.
Yeah. 100%. Even if you're in your studio here with the big window and you're getting sun through the window, you're getting a significant amount of UVA on your skin. So I tell all my patients sunscreen year round.
Sunscreen year
round. Now, in terms of the best sort of sunscreens.
The best sort, and we should talk about SPF.
Okay, so that's another issue. We could have a whole radio show on that.
Yeah.
But there's two types of sunscreens. There's chemical sunscreens, physical sunscreens. So the chemical sunscreens include the PABAs, the salicylates, avobenzone.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what that does is it takes the sun and through a chemical reaction converts the sun energy into heat. And that's how it dissipates the sun energy and protects the skin. Physical sunscreens like zinc oxide, titanium dioxide, those actually provide a barrier on your skin and don't actually let the sun penetrate the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The chemical sunscreens will often, they can cause allergic reactions, they can cause irritation. So a lot of patients will tell me, you know, I can't use sunscreens. They really irritate my skin. I get all sorts of reactions.
Yeah.
Whereas the physical blockers are much more hypoallergenic, don't usually cause reactions. I personally love physical blockers because they're predictable. You know when you're using a physical blocker, either zinc or titanium, that your protection is really, really good.
It doesn't get absorbed. It stays there.
Exactly.
Okay.
The sun never penetrates and it's broad spectrum UVA, UVB. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the chemical sunscreens, they have to put in, you know, four or five different chemicals. Some are UVB blockers, some are UVA blockers, some are not stable. Other chemicals have to stabilize those unstable chemicals. So those are chemicals kind of give you a broad spectrum coverage, but you never really know how good the protection is. Whereas with the physical blockers, it's more predictable.
Okay. And I see we do have a couple of questions about easing sun damage and taking the sun. We're going to get to your calls and your texts momentarily. 514-790-0800, Star Talk on Bell Mobility and 1-800-491-CJD. And we can also take your texts at 514-800. Show's called Skin Deep with Dr. Ronnie Monk, dermatologist, and me, Dan Laxer. Welcome back to Skin Deep. We're talking about your skin and keeping it healthy with dermatologist Dr. Ronnie Monk. My name is Dan Laxer. Lots of calls and questions to get to, which is exciting to see. Hi there, Anne. Welcome to CJAD.
Thank you. I wanted to ask about the sun damage. What can be done? Can it be reversed or can it be improved? Or I don't know how,
how
to phrase it.
So there's lots of things that can be done. I mean, I think the first thing that's really important is preventing further sun damage. So the things I've talked about, wearing sunscreen every day. But then, you know, a lot of the times when you say sun damage, to me, that implies, you know, the brown spots.
That's right, yes.
Those brown sunspots.
Mm-hmm.
And there's great treatments for it. So, you know, there's different types of lasers that can really target those brown guys and peel them off. There's intense pulse light treatments that, to me, are really effective because on top of the fact that they treat those brown spots, they also treat the blood vessels that also goes along with sun damage. So I love intense pulse light treatments because they kind of target both things and give the skin a nice, even hue to it. Other things, chemical peels, there's various creams, also bleaching creams that can help. Retinol creams can help reverse sun damage and build your collagen back. So,
and would all of these be available only at a dermatologist's office?
No. I mean, if you go and look around, you know, there's lots of estheticians doing them, family doctors doing them. To me, the benefit of doing them with a dermatologist is a dermatologist, of course, knows skin really well. Mm-hmm. And so you know that the treatments you're getting are appropriate for the condition because it's important to, you know, make the diagnosis, make sure that the dermatologist or whoever's looking at your skin isn't missing anything important. You know, those brown spots you have are just sunspots and not something else worrisome. Mm-hmm. So to me, that there's benefit to seeing a dermatologist. But I mean, if you look around, there's tons of people that offer these services.
Do you need a referral to see a dermatologist for something like this?
You know, it depends on the office. It depends, you know, some dermatologists consider it more of an aesthetic private issue, whereas uh-huh. others consider it medical. You just have to kind of look around.
I see. Okay, right. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Ann. Good to have you on the program. George, is your question similar? Hi there, George.
Hi.
How can we help you? Is your question similar to Ann's?
No, not quite. I have pemphigus vulgaris.
Okay.
Psoriasis.
Okay.
And CML. Mm. Should I be taking the sun at all?
Okay, so for those that don't know and aren't familiar, pemphigus vulgaris is actually an autoimmune condition where the immune system attacks the skin and causes blistering and erosions on the skin and open skin. And it happens on the skin, it happens in the mouth. So, you know, given you also have psoriasis, which is another kind of chronic skin condition where you get these red scaly plaques all over the skin. You know, a little bit of sun doesn't hurt for psoriasis. Sometimes we even recommend light treatment or phototherapy to help clear psoriasis. That being said, you know, there have been people with pemphigus that can actually get bad flares of their pemphigus with bouts of a lot of sun exposure and sunburns. So actually for a guy like yourself, I would really recommend as minimal sun exposure as possible.
Okay.
Because anything can flare that pemphigus up.
Okay.
All right, George, thanks for the call. I'm glad you called. Glad we could help. 7:23 CJD time. I want to grab a text before we go to a break. We were talking about sunscreen and sunburn, and you talked about how big an issue the SPF factor is. After a certain level, let's say 30 or 40, does it become overkill? Is it useless after a certain level?
I mean, that's a great question. So. Yeah. The studies have shown that after SPF 30, the plateau, the curve kind of plateaus. So at SPF 30, you get about 97% protection from UVB. And then, you know, if you go to SPF 50, you're at like 98.5, for example. So it really, really plateaus. That being said, when everybody, I mean, is applying an SPF 30 sunscreen, they're probably getting about SPF 15 on their skin. Because you're just not applying as much sunscreen as they did in the studies when they were measuring SPF.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's almost like, you know, you feel, okay, it's high enough. I don't have to put a lot on.
Exactly. So you're just not putting enough on. You're not getting that amount of SPF. And in fact, a lot of people put on their SPF, think that that's, you know, a good reason they could be in the sun and sunbathe. So in fact, they're doing more harm because even though they're putting on their SPF 30, for example, they're actually having an SPF 15 on their skin. They're going out, they're sunbathing. They're probably getting more sun than if they didn't put on their sunscreen and they tried to avoid the sun.
So it gives you that false sense of security in a way.
Yeah, it really does. Okay. And one other thing I want to say. So SPF is a little bit of a misleading factor.
Okay.
Everybody kind of is obsessed with the SPF and the SPF is the most important thing. But if you look at it, SPF is purely a UVB marker. When you buy a sunscreen and it's SPF 30 or SPF 50, that's telling you that it's good UVB protection. You have no clue what amount of UVA protection there is in there. And currently in Canada, aside from the sunscreen saying it's a broad spectrum UVA, UVB sunscreen, we have no way as consumers of knowing how good that UVA protection is.
Okay.
That's another reason, by the way, that I love zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, because you know, and I know, that those molecules are broad spectrum, and anything with those in there, with those molecules in the sunscreens, you know those are good sunscreens because they protect against UVA and UVB extremely well.
We got the right guy on the case for Skin Deep. Dr. Ronnie Monk is a dermatologist. We're here on CJD with me, Dan Laxer, to 514-790-0800. And you can text in to 514-800. Back in a sec. Having some interesting conversation with Dr. Monk off the air, which we're going to get into a little bit later on the program. We're going to talk about things like nasal labial folds, which isn't as dirty as it sounds, and all kinds of other stuff. It's Skin Deep on CJD. Dr. Ronnie Monk is a dermatologist. Phone numbers are 514-790-0800. Lots of calls there. And text at 514-800. And Dino texted in earlier. His text says, I keep getting Tinea versicolor.
Yep, Tinea versicolor.
Tinea versicolor on the back of my neck. My dermo gave me Selsun 2% and pills for 10 days. It goes away only to return a year or less later. What can I do? Why does it come back? What is Tinea versicolor?
So it's basically a fungus. It's a fungus called Malassezia. Furfur lives on everybody's skin. So actually it's not contagious because everybody has it.
Okay.
But in certain people, and it's a pretty common thing actually, in certain people, especially when they go in the sun, it'll cause kind of these discolored spots on their chest,
oh,
on their
sure.
back.
Oh, sure, yeah, and shoulders.
Yeah, often okay. on the shoulders. And it's a really common problem, and it keeps recurring every summer, you know, the same type. If you're prone to it, you keep getting it all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, the pills work, like there's antifungal pills that are very effective. However, that's maybe a bit of overkill unless it's really extensive.
Mm-hmm.
There's various antifungal creams or lotions that are effective. The key, though, for it not to come back is you really need to do a maintenance regimen. So what I tell a lot of my patients is there's this antifungal shampoo, for example, a ketoconazole shampoo. I tell them to use it as a soap twice a week, maybe Monday, Thursday, lather it into their body, leave it on 10 minutes, then rinse it off. And if you do it twice a week, it's been shown, you know, it doesn't recur as quickly, or it can keep it away. So some sort of maintenance regimen is important.
And what's the shampoo again?
Ketoconazole. It's actually over the counter. Selsun Blue is another one.
He mentioned Selsun. I guess it has that stuff in it.
Selsun actually is antifungal too, so that can work. Even Head and Shoulders, the zinc pyrithione in Head and Shoulders is also antifungal and can work as well.
Okay, fantastic. Skin Deep, right here on CJD with dermatologist Dr. Ronnie Monk and me, Dan Lax.
The opinions of the commentator or commentators are solely those of the commentators and not of CJAD 800 or Bell Media.
Welcome back to Skin Deep. My name is Dan Laxer, and I'm in studio with Dr. Ronnie Monk. 514-790-0800 is the number you can reach us at. Star Talk on Bell Mobility. And you can text your questions in to 514-800. I got all kinds of each. Why don't we go right to the phones? Hi there, Mark. Welcome to CJAD.
Hello. I'm calling because, I'm 45 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And at age around 23, 24, I went to see the doctor for a skin lesion on my nose. And it appeared to be like a pimple, but it wasn't a pimple. The doctor referred me to a specialist, a skin specialist, and took out that growth and analyzed it and said it wasn't cancerous, but it was some sort of tumor. So my question was, once it was taken out, it came right back. Like within a year, it reappeared.
In the same spot?
The same spot, the same size, same color.
Okay.
And it appears lately that I have another one growing next to it. So one question was, am I to expect, and he said back in the day that it was caused by the skin, by the sun.
Okay.
So to be exposed for so many hours, whatever.
Okay.
So I'm wondering, will I have any problems later on for, like, will I have a nose full of it later on? And the other question was, will it turn bad? Will it become cancerous?
It's a hard question for me to answer because it really depends on that initial biopsy and what it showed.
Okay.
You know, there's lots and lots of benign, regular type of things that can grow on the nose.
Okay.
For example, there's something called angiofibromas or a fibrous papule.
Okay.
And that's, it's pretty common and it looks like a pimple, never goes away, and it feels kind of firm, kind of like scar tissue.
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, if you cut it out and you don't really get the base or burn the base off, it can come right back.
Right.
But that's nothing worrisome. It's a regular lesion.
Okay.
Now, that being said, if it continues to really change and evolve and grow, or if you have a new one next to it, then I think it's probably a good idea for you to get either go back to the same doc, get another evaluation just to make sure there's nothing else.
And also the difference between a regular pimple and, because I compare it, because it looks like the same type of skin lesion. It stays skin color, and it's, well, maybe a little bit red.
Yeah.
But it's about the same size as a teenager's pimple without the pus.
Yeah.
So you know, I was just thinking, like, later on in life, if I get to the age of 60 and my immune system goes down, will it turn bad or not, you know?
Well, you know, it depends what it is. If it, let's assume, or let's just say it was an angiofibroma,
right?
Those will never turn malignant. Those are benign, not worrisome, nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
But if it was a precancerous thing or something,
right,
then for sure it should be followed and monitored and watched.
Okay.
So I would go back to your dermatologist. It really depends on that first biopsy he did. And if you have a new one, he should evaluate that one too.
Okay. Well, thank you very, very much.
No problem.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Glad
okay,
we
bye.
Helped. 514-790-0800. And of course you can text in to 514-800. And doctor, we've got a text and a call about Cool Sculpting. The texter writes, I'd like to know how safe and effective Cool Sculpting is for women over 75 years. Can there be any side effects left with long-term sensitive skin if one has sensitive skin? It's a difficult one to understand exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, I did a cosmetic dermatology fellowship in Ottawa for a year.
Okay.
And I got a lot of experience doing Cool Sculpting over there.
What is Cool Sculpting?
So Cool Sculpting is basically a technology where you essentially freeze off the fat.
Okay.
So in the past, you know, we used to send to the plastic surgeons for some liposuction, and it's really meant for pockets of fat.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, somebody with a love handles, or, you know, in the belly, maybe after a C-section or a delivery, you have a little pocket of fat right in your belly.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. And these are meant for people that are in shape, you know, but just kind of have these pockets, maybe back fat, or maybe on the backs of their legs, and they just can't get rid of them despite all the exercise they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really meant for body contouring. Okay, it's not meant for weight loss. You're not going to lose weight with Cool Sculpting. You're just going to kind of zap those pockets of fat, and essentially what it does is it freezes that fat, and then you get a gradual fat cell death, and you get an immune reaction against the fat, and then you get, like I said, contouring of the body, of the area. So I think if you're the right candidate, if you're fit and you just have, like I said, these pockets, then Cool Sculpting works great. However, when you're not the perfect candidate, if you have other weight to lose and you know, expectations are important to set, if you think you're doing it for weight loss, I think you're going to be very disappointed.
Okay, good to know. Susan, was that your question? Is that what you were going for? Susan?
Yeah. Yes, it was. But I also wanted to know, I checked the computer for reviews, and there have been some people saying that there are no results. Maybe perhaps they're overweight people, like you were saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of it, and, you know, when the person was appropriate and it was a good candidate, I think the results are actually pretty good. And, you know, a lot of the guys previously doing liposuction do a lot less of it because they just do a lot more Cool Sculpting.
They find it more effective.
Yeah.
Okay. But the concern is, well, there was one review left with side effects of very sensitive skin.
Mm-hmm.
I
have seen a couple of people getting a skin sensitivity or a bit of numbness in the area after Cool Sculpting, and it's lasted, you know, a few months for sure, maybe even longer than that. But, you know, those risks go along with any type of procedure you're going to do. If you're going to go and you're going to do some liposuction on your belly, I mean, they're cutting the skin, they're cutting the nerves. That can result in some numbness and sensitivity there too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that goes for all cosmetic procedures. Nothing's without risk, you know. But for the vast majority of people, and I probably treated about, I don't know, 50, 60 people over the year, the vast majority of people really tolerated it well. It's a non-invasive thing. There's no cutting the skin. And I just want to say one more thing, that Cool Sculpting is not the only technology out there. I actually do a similar procedure in my office where I contour, but through radio frequency and heat, which is interesting because it's the exact opposite of Cool Sculpting.
I was just going to say, yeah.
But there's lots of them out there. They're very popular. And I think if you're the right patient, they work extremely well.
Okay, Susan, thanks so much for the call. Glad we could help. We also got a text about nasal labial folds and how to properly treat those.
Yeah, so it's interesting because, you know, in the past, a lot of people came in, they didn't like. So I'll just point out for the listeners, the nasal labial folds, those are those deep folds that as you get older between the nose and your mouth, you get those lines. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I get a lot of people coming to me and they say, I look older and I have these deep lines on my face. You know, what can I do about it? And I usually tell them exactly what I'm going to say right now, which is, you know, in the past, we always used to, the go-to for those nasolabial folds was to fill those with fillers. Mm-hmm. So whether you're using Juvederm, Restylane, any of those hyaluronic acid fillers, and you fill those folds, they did really well. We're a little bit smarter now, though. We know now that the reason you have those folds is because what happens is, you know, when you're young, you have nice volume in your cheek. And as you lose that volume with aging, which is normal, your bones change, your muscles change, and you just lose some of that hyaluronic acid, that natural substance that gives volume in the skin. So you lose that naturally over time. Your cheeks start to sink, and then you get those deep nasolabial folds. Mm-hmm. So the thought is now, instead of just putting filler directly into the lines, we don't line chase anymore. We put filler onto the bone and we restructure the bone and give volume back into the cheek. Essentially, it behaves like a non-invasive mini facelift.
Okay.
So by lifting those cheeks, those folds really improve. So it's pretty, I sometimes do still fill the nasolabial folds, but I don't do it frequently. I often will, building up the cheek is my number one priority for people with deep nasolabials.
Would you have to build up the cheek as often as you would have to treat the line?
No, because you're really addressing the underlying cause, that volume loss that people have as they get older. Whereas, you know, you could pump 2-3 syringes of filler into each nasolabial fold, you still won't get a great result.
Okay.
When you build up that cheek, you can use much less product and build up that cheek. You get much more improvement of that fold. It looks much more natural. Mm-hmm. And people are really happy about it as opposed to just putting in that filler. If you just fill the fold and you don't address the underlying volume loss in the cheek, I don't think it looks good.
Okay, fair enough. Dr. Ronnie Monk is our resident dermatologist here on CJD. The show is called Skin Deep. My name's Dan Laxer. 514-790-0800 is our number, and we've got lots of calls about keratosis pilaris and rosacea. We'll get to those in a couple of moments. Skin Deep on CJD at 7:50. My name is Dan Laxer, in studio with Dr. Ronnie Monk, dermatologist. You know what? Before we go any further, if people want to get in touch with you off the air, how can they reach you?
I mean, they call me. I have two phone numbers, one for my medical clinic, one for my private cosmetic clinic. Mm-hmm. They're on my website, monkmd.com. So they can go there and call me.
monkmd.com. And right now you're here at 514-790-0800. And this is interesting. This is, hi there, Edith. Welcome to CJD.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You have a question about rosacea.
Yes, yes. Well, basically, I'm 51 years old and I know what's involved regarding rosacea. But I just want to ask you a question. It's just that I've used, in the summertime, I'm okay with my face. Mm-hmm. And in the wintertime, I get dry. And I've tried products that had shea butter, parky, creams, and I ended up breaking out with it.
Yeah.
Now, someone told me that obviously it's probably too rich and that you need to use an oil-free product. Is that correct?
I agree with that because, you know, rosacea, so for those that don't know, that's a condition that often will come up in adulthood. It's associated with flushing and blushing, redness in the cheeks, but also you're very prone to breakout. And it can actually, you can get so many pimples, it looks kind of like teenage acne.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So the products you're putting on your face are extremely important. First of all, sunscreen, super important because the sun always makes rosacea worse.
Right.
And then, you know, creams, if you're dry and flaky, then creams are a good idea, moisturizing creams, but they should always be oil-free because you're more prone to breakouts. And then if you're of the type that you really do break out easily, then there's great, especially over the past couple of years, there's been great developments in new treatments for inflammatory rosacea.
Okay.
So there's there's a new drug called Aprilon, which is a very low-dose doxycycline, works extremely well and is a very safe pill you can take for rosacea to really reduce the inflammation.
Okay.
Just over the past couple months, there's been a new topical, a new cream that's come out, topical permethrin cream, which has been shown to be really effective anti-inflammatory for pimples in rosacea.
Okay.
So if you're still breaking out, then definitely consult a derm and get seen and get treated.
And any recommendations, obviously, well, I guess you can't say products on the phone, but for moisturizers and foundations?
Honestly, just...
as long as it's oil-free?
Oil-free. It should feel very, very light. Lotion's better than creams.
Okay.
Nothing thick and greasy.
Okay, thank you very much.
No, thanks for the call, Edith. Susanna joins us from the West Island. I have to try to pronounce this. A question about keratosis pilaris. Am I saying that right?
That sounds good.
Hi there, Susanna.
Hi, good evening.
Hi, Susanna.
How can we help?
Well, I just wanted to find out if there is a solution for that.
So
I've been told no, but in the winter it seems to be aggravated more so.
Yeah, so keratosis pilaris, for those that don't know, basically that chicken skin type of feel on the arms. You kind of get these plugged hair follicles. It feels rough and can get red. So there are treatments. You know, there's various creams that can help kind of soften the skin. Some of them have glycolic acid, some of them have urea, lacridrin, but basically those can help soften. The problem is, you know, it is your type of skin, you're prone to it. As soon as you stop those creams, the problem comes right back.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
For people that don't get nice improvement or relief with those creams, there's also some physical treatments that we can do. For example, some microdermabrasions, or just physical treatments to actually unblock those hair follicles on the arms. I do a great treatment like that in my office where we can really get nice improvement after several treatments, anywhere from 3 to 6 treatments, but really soften the skin. But will it come back? Yes. Should you do maintenance treatments to keep the results? Yeah. I mean, if you maintain it, then the results can be great.
All right.
Fantastic. Thank you. You'll be seeing me in your office soon.
Excellent. Thanks for the call, Susanna.
Have a good evening.
It is 7:54 CJD time. Lots more calls and texts to get to. Our remaining moments with Dr. Ronnie Monk on Skin Deep on CJD in just a sec. Our remaining moments on CJD with Dr. Ronnie Monk, dermatologist, 514-790-0800. And you can text in to 514-800 as well. This one came from Andrew. Text about acne. He said, as a teenager, I had quite a lot of acne. In early 2000, so 15 years ago, I proceeded to try a laser procedure treatment for acne on the sides of my face. Sadly, my skin was damaged and since then has stayed red. Can it come back to a normal look? What kind of product or treatment can I use? What likely happened to this guy?
Yeah, I don't know. But if you get irritated, or even after you have acne, you know, when the pimples resolve, you're kind of left with this redness.
Yeah.
Over time, will the redness resolve? It's possible it resolves on its own. It's also possible that it lingers and lingers. So, you know, I do some laser treatments in my office, and there are lots of treatments available that really target the redness well and will cause the redness to fade. So mm-hmm. after you do a laser treatment or whatever, if the treatment's too strong, if it really irritates the skin, that can lead to lasting redness. But there are things that can be done like laser treatment to really reduce it.
Okay. All right. I hope that helps, Andrew. And this is Elaine from St. Laurent. Hi there, Elaine. Hello, Elaine.
Hi, Dr. Monk.
Hi, Elaine.
Hi. I would just like to know, what is the best shampoo to use for eczema?
That's
in the scalp.
That's a good question.
Eczema on the scalp. I've seen eczema on skin. I didn't know you can get it on your scalp.
Well, it's in the bottom of my back of my neck. And my neck a bit.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have eczema in the scalp, especially the subtype that's called seborrheic eczema. The best shampoos for those, if that's the type of eczema you're talking about, which is really common, is either this Nizoral or Ketoconazole shampoo, which is antifungal. Mm-hmm. Same one that works for tinea versicolor, like we talked about before.
Nizoral or what?
Ketoconazole. They're the same. That one's just the trade name.
Okay.
There's also Selsun Blue or Head and Shoulder. So those are kind of all...
Oh, it's like for dandruff.
Yeah. So
okay.
The key with those is keep them in the scalp for about 5 minutes and then rinse them. they work better.
Okay.
All right. I hope that helps you, Elaine. We got to run. Thanks so much
Thanks
for the call.
Thanks a lot.
Bye, Elaine.
Dr. Monk, what's this about you having a great big bunch of children?
I got to give a shout out to my kids. I have three beautiful daughters, Gabby, Jamie, and Avery. I love them. I just want to say hi. And to my beautiful wife, Gail, love you too.
What are they all doing awake, even Gail, at this hour?
They're listening to me. They're excited I'm on air.
We got all kinds of calls and texts. We have to have you back because clearly people are concerned about their skin.
I'd love to be back.
In the meantime, we will have you back. In the meantime, again, that website.
So monkmd.com.
Monkmd.com.
Yeah, you can get my telephone numbers there. Both my cosmetic and my medical phone numbers are listed.
And it's RONINMUNK.
Exactly.
Dr. Ronnie Monk, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
It was a pleasure. We'll do it again. My name is Dan Laxer. There's David Simon. Stay tuned for The Exchange with Yolande James after the 8 o'clock news.